Hold on for another jump, and this one is a shocker. Saul is no longer human. He's a pig. All cops are pigs. Everything you ever believed is probably a lie. The world is a dark, sinister, mysterious, and totally frightening place. Can you digest all that quickly? Then, walk into the mind of George Dawn for the second time. 5 hours before the explosion at Confrontation, 4 hours before on the clock. And suck on the joint, suck hard, and hold it down. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, rock. You are sprawled on a crummy bed in a run-down hotel, and a neon light outside is flashing pink and blue patterns into your room. Exhale slowly. Feel the hit of the weed and see if the wallpaper looks any brighter yet, any less unintentional low camp. It's hot, Texas dry hot. And you push your long hair back from your forehead and haul out your diary, George Dawn. Because reading over what you wrote last sometimes helps you to learn what you're really getting into. As the neon splotches the page with pink and blue, read this. April 23. How do we know whether the universe is getting bigger? All the objects in it are getting smaller. You can't say that the universe is getting bigger in relation to anything outside it, because there isn't any outside for it to relate to. There isn't any outside. But if the universe doesn't have an outside, then it goes on forever. Yeah, but its inside doesn't go on forever. How do you know it doesn't, shithead? You're just playing with words, man. No, I'm not. The universe is the inside without an outside. The sound made by one... There was a knock at the door. The fear came over George. Whenever he was high, the least little detail wrong in his world would bring the fear. Irresistible, uncontrollable. He held his breath. Not to contain the smoke in his lungs, but because terror had paralyzed the muscles in his chest. He dropped the little notebook in which he wrote his thoughts daily and clutched at his penis, a habitual gesture in moments of panic. The hand holding the roach drifted automatically over the hollowed-out copy of Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here, which lay beside him on the bed, and he dropped the half-inch twist of paper and marijuana on top of the plastic baggie full of green grains. Instantly, a brown, smouldering, dime-sized hole opened up on the bag, and the pot near the coal started to smoke.
"Stupid,"
said George, as his thumb stabbed the smoking coal to crush it. And he drew back his lips in a grimace of pain. A short, fat man walked into the room. "Law officer," written in every mean line of his crafty little face. George shrank back and started to close It Can't Happen Here. Like lightning, three stiff, concrete-hard fingers drove into his forearm. He screamed. The book jumped out of his hand, spilling pot all over the bedspread.
"Don't touch that," said the fat man. "An officer be in here to gather it up for evidence. I went easy with that karate punch. Otherwise you'd be nursing a compound fracture of the left arm in Mad Dog County Jail tonight. No right thinking doctor likely to have a mind to come out and treat you."
"Have you got a warrant?"
George tried to sound defiant.
"Oh, you think you have cojones?"
The fat man's breath stank of bourbon and cheap cigars.
"Rabbit cojones. I've terrified you unto death, boy, and you know it and I know it, yet you find it in your heart to speak of warrants. Next you want to see the American Civil Liberties Union."
He pulled aside the jacket of an iridescent grey summer suit that might have been new when Heartbreak Hotel was the top of the hit parade. A silver five-pointed star decorated his pink shirt pocket, and a .45 automatic stuck in his pants top dented the fat of his belly.
"That is all the lore I need when dealing with your type and Mad Dog. Walk careful with me, son.
or you won't have nothing to grab onto next time one of us pigs, as you choose to call us in your little articles, busts in on you. Which is not likely to happen in the next 40 years while you rot and grow old in our state prison."
He seemed immensely pleased with his own oratorical style, like one of Faulkner's characters. George thought, "It is forbidden to dream again. We maim our joys or hide them. Horses are made of chromium steel, and little fat men shall ride them." He said,
"You can't hit me with 40 years for possession, and grass is legal in most other states. This law is archaic and absurd."
"Shit and onions, boy. You got too much of the killer weed there to call it mere possession. I call it possession with intent to sell. And the laws of this state are stern, and they are just, and they are our laws. And we know what that weed can do. We remember the Alamo and Santa Anna's troops losing all fear because they was high on Rosa Maria, as they called it in those days. Get on your feet, and don't ask to talk to a lawyer, neither.
Can I ask who you are?"
"I am Sheriff Jim Cartwright, nemesis of all evil in Mad Dog and Mad Dog County."
"And I'm Tiny Tim,"
said George, immediately saying to himself, "Shut the fuck up, you two goddamn high." And he went right on and said,
"Well, maybe your slide would have won if Davy Crockett and Jim Bowie had got stoned too. And by the way, Sheriff, how did you know you could catch me with pot? Usually an underground journalist would make it a point to be clean when he comes into this godforsaken part of the country. It wasn't telepathy that told you I had pot on me."
Sheriff Cartwright slapped his thigh.
"Oh, but it was. It was telepathy. Now, just what made you think it wasn't telepathy brung me here?"
He laughed, seized George's arm in a grip of iron, and pushed him towards the hotel room door. George felt a bottomless terror, as if the pit of hell were opening beneath his feet, and Sheriff Jim Cartwright were about to pitchfork him into the bubbling sulphur. And I must admit, that was more or less the case. There are periods of history when the visions of madmen and dope fiends are a better guide to reality than the common-sense interpretation of data available to the so-called normal mind. This is one such period, if you haven't noticed already.
"Keep on hanging with those wild boys from Passaic, and you will end up in jail,"
George's mother said.
"You mark my words, George."
And another time at Columbia, after a very late meeting, Mark Rudd said soberly,
"A lot of us are gonna spend some time in the man's jails before this shitstorm is over."
And George, together with the others, nodded glumly but bravely. The marijuana he had been smoking was raised in Cuernavaca by a farmer named Arturo Jesus Maria Ibarra y Mendez, who had sold it in bulk to a young Yankee named Jim Riley, the son of a Dayton, Ohio police officer, who in turn smuggled it through Mad Dog after paying a suitable bribe to Sheriff Jim Cartwright. After that, it was resold to a Times Square dealer called Rosetta the Stoned, and a Miss Walsh from Confrontation's research department bought 10 ounces from her, later reselling 5 ounces to George, who then carried it back to Mad Dog, without any suspicion that he was virtually completing a cycle. The original seed was part of that strain recommended by General George Washington in the famous letter to Sir John Sinclair, in which he writes,
"I find that, for all purposes, the Indian hemp is in every way superior to the New Zealand variety previously cultivated here."
In New York, Rebecca Goodman, deciding that Saul will not be home tonight, slips out of bed, dons a robe, and begins to browse through her library. Finally, she selects a book on Babylonian mythology and begins to read, "Before all of the gods was Mumu, the spirit of pure chaos." In Chicago, Simon and Mary Lou Cervix sit naked on her bed, legs intertwined in the yab-yum lotus position.
"No,"
Simon is saying.
"You don't move, baby. You wait for you to move you."
Clark Kent and his supermen swing into a reprise. "We're gonna rock around the clock tonight. We're gonna rock, rock, rock till broad daylight." George's cellmate in Mad Dog County Jail had a skull-like face with large protruding front teeth. He was about 6.5 feet tall and lay curled up in his cell bunk like a coiled python.
Have you asked for treatment?
George asked him.
Treatment for what?
Well, if you think you're an assassin, I don't think, baby brother. I've killed 4 white men and 2 niggers. 1 in California, the rest down here. Got paid for every one of them. Is that what you're in here for?
My God, they don't stick murderers in the same cell with potheads, do they?
I'm in for vagrancy,
said the man scornfully.
Actually, I'm just here for safekeeping till they give me my orders. Then it's goodbye to whoever. President, civil rights leader, enemy of the people. Someday I'll be famous. I'm gonna write a book about myself someday, Ace. Course, I'm no good at writing. Look, maybe we could do a deal. I'll have Sheriff Jim bring you some writing paper, and if you'll write about my life, they're gonna keep you here forever, you know. I'll come visit you in between assassinations, and you'll write the book, and Sheriff Jim will keep it safe till I retire. Then you have the book published, and you make a lot of money and be real comfortable in jail. Or maybe you can even hire a lawyer to get you out. Where will you be?
Said George. He was still scared. He was feeling sleepy, too. He was deciding that this was all bullshit, which had a calming effect on his nerves. But he'd better not go to sleep in the cell while this guy was awake. He didn't really believe this assassin talk, but it was safe to assume that anybody he met in prison was homosexual. As if reading his mind, his cellmate said,
How'd you like to let a famous assassin shove it up to you? How would that be, huh, Ace? Please,
said George.
That's not my bag, you know. I really couldn't do it. Shit, piss, and corruption,
said the assassin. He suddenly uncoiled and slid off the bunk.
I've been wasting my time with you. Now bend the hell over and drop your pants. You're getting it, and there ain't no further way about it.
He stepped toward George, fists clenched.
Guard! Guard!
George yelled. He grabbed the cell door in both hands and began rattling it frantically. The man caught George a cuff across the face. Another blow to the jaw knocked George against the wall. Guard! He screamed, his head spinning with pot and panic. A man in a blue uniform came through the door at the end of the corridor. He seemed miles away and vastly disinterested, like a god who had grown bored with his creations.
Now what the hell is all this yelling about in here?
He asked, his hand on the butt of his revolver, his voice still miles away. George opened his mouth, but his cellmate spoke first.
This little long-haired communist freak won't drop his pants when I tell him. Ain't you supposed to make sure I'm happy in here?
The voice shifted to a whine.
Make him do what I say.
You've got to protect me,
said George.
You got to get me out of this cell.
The God Guard laughed.
Well, now, you might say this is a very enlightened prison we have here. You come down from New York and you probably think we're pretty backward, but we ain't. You got no police brutality. Now, if I interfered between you and Harry Cohen here, I might have to use force to keep him away from your young ass. I know you people believe all cops ought to be abolished. Well, in this here situation, I hereby abolish myself. Furthermore, I know you people believe in sexual freedom, and I do too. So, Harry Cohn gonna have his sexual freedom without any interference or brutality from me.
His voice was still distant and disinterested. Almost dreamy.
No,
said George. The guard drew his pistol.
Now, sonny, you take down your pants and bend over. You are gonna get it up the ass from Harry Cohen here and no two ways about it. And I'm gonna watch and see that you let him do it right. Otherwise, you get no 40 years. You get killed right now. I put a bullet in you and say you were resisting arrest. Now make your mind up. What's it gonna be? I really will kill you if you don't do like it tells you to. I really will. You are totally expendable, and he ain't. He's a very important man, and it's my job to keep him happy.
And I'll fuck you either way, dead or alive.
The demented coin laughed like an evil spirit.
So there's no way you can escape it, Ace?
The door at the end of the corridor clanged, and Sheriff Jim Cartwright and two blue uniformed policemen strode down to the cell.
What's going on here?
Said the sheriff.
I caught this queer punk George Doan here trying to commit homosexual rape on Harry.
Said the guard.
Had to draw my pistol to stop him.
George shook his head.
You guys are unbelievable. If you're acting out this little game for my benefit, you can quit now because you're certainly not fooling each other and you're not fooling me.
Doran, said the sheriff, you've been attempting unnatural acts in my jail. Acts forbidden by the Holy Bible and the laws of this state. And I don't like that. I don't like it one little bit. Come on out here. I want to have a little talk with you. We're going to the main interrogation room for some speaking together.
He unlocked the cell door and motioned George to precede him. He turned to the two policemen who had accompanied him.
Stay behind and take care of that other little matter.
The last words were strangely emphasized. George and the sheriff walked through a series of corridors and locked doors until at last they came to a room whose walls were made of embossed sheets. Tin painted bottle green. The sheriff told George to sit on one chair while he straddled the back of the chair facing him.
You're a bad influence on my prisoners,
he said.
I got a good mind to see that some kind of accident happens to you. I don't want to see you corrupting prisoners in my jail, mine or anyone's, for 40 years.
Sheriff, said George, what do you want from me? You got me on a pot charge. What more do you want? Why did you stick me in that cell with that guy? What's all this scare stuff and threats and questioning for?
I want to know some things,
said the sheriff.
I want to find out everything you can tell me about certain matters. So, from this moment, be prepared to tell me only the truth. If you do, maybe things go easy on you after.
Yes, sheriff,
said George. Cartwright squinted at him.
He really does look like a pig, thought George. Most do. Why do so many of them get so fat and have such little eyes?
Well then,
said the sheriff,
what was your purpose in coming down here from New York?
I'm simply on an assignment from Confrontation, the magazine.
I know it. It is a smutty magazine and a communist magazine. I have read it.
You're using loaded words. It's a left-wing libertarian magazine, to be exact.
My pistol is loaded too, boy, so talk straight. All right. Tell me what you came down here to write about.
Sure. You ought to be as interested in this as I am. If you're really interested in law and order... There have been rumors circulating throughout the country for more than a decade now that all the major political assassinations in America, Malcolm X, the Kennedy brothers, Medgar Evers, King, Nixon, maybe even George Lincoln Rockwell, are the work of a single conspiratorial, violence-orientated right-wing organization. And that this organization has its base right here in Mad Dog. I came down here to see what I could find out about this group.
That's what I figured,
said the sheriff.
You poor, sad little turd. You come down here with your long hair, and you expect to get, as you put it, a line on a right-wing organization? Why, it's lucky for you you didn't meet any of our real right-wingers, like God's Lightning, for instance. The ones around here would have tortured you to death by this time, boy. You really are dumb.
Okay, I'm not going to waste any more of my time with you. Come on, I'll take you back to your cell. You might as well get used to looking at the moon through bars.
They walked back the same way they'd come. At the entrance to the corridor where George's cell was, the sheriff opened the door and yelled,
"Come and get him, Charlie!"
George's guard, his face pale and his mouth set in a lipless line, took George by the arm. The corridor door clanged shut behind the sheriff. Charlie took George to his cell and pushed him in wordlessly. But at least he was three-dimensional now, and less like a marijuana phantom. Harry Coyne wasn't there. The cell was empty. George became aware of a shadow in the corner of his vision. Something in the cell next to him. He turned. His heart stopped. There was a man hanging from a pipe on the ceiling. George went over and stared through the bars. The body was swaying slightly. It was attached to the pipe by a leather belt, which was buckled around the neck. The face, with the staring eyes, was that of Harry Coyne. George's glance went lower. Something was coming out of Harry Coyne's midsection and was dangling down to the floor. It wasn't a suicide. They had disemboweled Harry Coyne, and someone had thoughtfully moved a shit can under him for his bloody intestines to dangle into. George screamed. There was no one around to answer him. The guard had vanished like Hermes.